Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 305 for comics originally released on June 12th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Superman Unchained number 1. Or Superman Unfolded number 1, as I'm going to refer to it as.
Ha!
I'm going to say flat out, and maybe this is considered a nitpick or whatever, when I got a few pages into the story and it hit that fold-out page, which I frankly was not expecting. It threw me right out of the story. I'm like, well, hang on, what the hell's going on here with the page? I had to
figure out how to get my tools.
Yeah, exactly. How to unfold it, make room for it where I was reading, which I didn't really have. Then it's, oh, wait, I've got to turn the page with it unfolded. So let's stop, do that, kind of read the thing, but it was still kind of folded, you know, or not flat, so it didn't want to be read easily. And then let's refold it back to get it nice into the comic again, move on. And then when I got to, you know, actually see the bigger page, for both the front and the back, I'm like, that was okay, but it was more distracting and annoying than if it had been a regular page, and I didn't feel that Jim Lee did something so amazing on those pages.
It wasn't worth the extra dollar?
No, not at all. Well, this was a $4.99 book. If you count those pages as regular pages and with the amount of story content, I think that's fair. This is a 22-page lead story, a 2-page backup, and 4 pages of the 5.2 questions interview.
Yes.
Not the best value for the money.
No.
I mean, it was a good first issue. Not a great, not a brilliant, but it was good. It didn't wow me as I was expecting a story by Scott Snyder to wow me, or art by Jim Lee to wow me.
And, you know, that's what it suffered for me. It was good. And I think I think they're a good team, and I like the story, I like the team, I like the creative team. It was really good, but my God, my expectations for Scott Snyder and Jim Lee, and then put them together, I was expecting, you know, a sheer genius.
Yeah.
On the page, and it wasn't that, but it was a good comic.
Yeah. Again, I don't think there was anything seriously wrong about it or whatever. They had some interesting stuff. The use of General Lane, I liked that. It was interesting. The guy at the end, who we'd also seen at the beginning, kind of the who is he? He was intriguing. I liked that. You know, I could nitpick about Superman now has gamma vision. It's like, you know, maybe the Marvel lawyers should get on him for that. I don't know. It had some fun stuff. It was a good issue, a good Superman issue, a decent first issue. It intrigued me. It kind of set stuff up. It didn't clarify for me what makes this different than Superman or Action.
Yeah, and I have to, for full disclosure, this is my first Superman book since John Byrne's Man of Steel miniseries.
Wow.
So I had taken a brief hiatus.
Oh, that's more than brief.
And, of course, had never read a new 52 Superman, except the character in Justice League.
Right.
The new characterizations were really new for me. So, the new media angle of Clark not at the Daily Planet and instead as a blogger or whatever was interesting. And Clark Kent seems kind of cool. He doesn't seem like the nerdy buffoon, you know, character that he kind of used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. These were new things for me that maybe are new 52 staples, but I liked those interpretations of the character.
I would say that they're definitely aspects that have been, you know, part and parcel of the new 52 stuff. They've kind of, for lack of a better term, Harry Potterized Clark to a degree. Mm. Younger, a little more hipper, not the geeky buffoon like he used to be, you know, kind of the Christopher Reeve interpretation.
Yeah, which, and, you know, Lois is... I liked Lois,
mm-hmm.
and I liked Jimmy Olsen character. I don't know what the limitations are on the Lois relationship because of what's going on continuity-wise, but I would love to see something there.
they've pretty much established in the new 52 universe that they've never been a couple and probably never will be. Mm. She's got a boyfriend and that kind of stuff. Superman's, of course, been hanging out with Wonder Woman and you know, they're trying to go in a different direction. But I think to an extent, they're almost rebelling against the old status quo, trying to say, oh, it is different, and not doing different because it's good, but because it's different.
But I you know, from the pages in the back, if Scott Snyder is saying, I'm going to treat like this is the only Superman story I will ever get to write in my life, and I'm going to leave it all on the page, I can't imagine he wouldn't explore the Lois and Clark Kent relationship or Superman relationship.
Oh, and they very well may. It's just compared to what's going on elsewhere in the New 52, you know, but there are other places where different titles in the New 52 don't jive with each other.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we've seen that before. I'm curious where they're going to go with this. I'm curious how the market reacts and receives it. I mean, this was a solid enough issue. I'm sure the first issue will sell really well.
Mm-hmm.
The big question to me is how the second and third issues do, both in terms of how much I like them and how well they sell.
My local comic shop sold through 29 copies, which was pretty good for it. It's a small shop.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was at a bigger shop today, and they had a rack of them. So you never know.
Yeah, it comes down to what's the demand at that store, and then how many copies did they get.
Yeah,
I will be curious to see if there's any kind of consensus on was the fold-out page considered cool, indulgent, like I thought it was. Or
no one liked it. Universally hated, I believe.
That brings all the fun of refolding a map into reading comics. What's not to like?
For all you part-time cartographers out there.
Exactly. Again, this was good, but it wasn't stellar. To me, it was a 4 out of 5. It was above average, and with these two creators, I would have expected that. But I think one of the things working against this issue was expectations.
Yeah. I wanted it to be a 5 out of 5, but it's a 4 out of 5.
Totally agree with that. And given how Hush did, given how other things, you know, Justice League with Geoff Johns, Jim Lee, and stuff like that, I don't think the expectations were set absurdly high by a lot of people.
No, I mean, there were some, like I said, and I think you mentioned as well, there were some really interesting elements to this that in the next couple of issues could be explored and expanded and really be blow us away. So I'm not shutting the door to that. Mm-hmm. But for a debut issue, it was enough, a strong enough issue to continue reading the title.
I wonder if it would have been better received if it was of the same quality and content, essentially, but just different named creators. In other words, if it didn't have to fight against, wow, it's you know, Jim Lee, Scott Snyder, and that those expectations.
Boy, I don't know. I don't. It would have probably just went out with. I don't know if it would have received any kind of fanfare, really.
You know, that's true. It could be that without those expectations having been set, without those creators on the book, it would have launched middle of the charts to a ho-hum, yeah, it's another Superman book, why are they doing that?
Yeah, it could have done Adventures of Superman numbers.
Yeah, it's a tough market.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Sure.
Thor, God of Thunder, number 9. Now, this is part 3 of the God Bomb, which is part 2 of whatever the first story arc was. You know, it's the 9th issue of what the title of the story that started with the title.
Yes.
And to me, that's definitely coloring my perception of this, because I thought this was a good issue. I thought there was fun interplay between the different age Thors, but it's also the same basic, not the same, it's the same story we've been reading for the last, you know, nine issues.
That's such a good story.
It is, but I've had so much time. It's now the status quo. It's not a story, if you know what I mean. It used to be back in the day when stories were more the done-in-one type thing that issues really stood out because that's when a villain came in, had his action, this was the story, this was the major, you know, story beat or event or whatever, and then boom, it's off to the next thing, next issue. Here, we've been getting Gore, the God Killer and stuff, or the God Butcher, I guess, for quite a few issues. He's very interesting. They're telling a very different kind of a story here, and I'm liking it. But this issue doesn't particularly stand out that much from the previous 8, if you know what I mean.
I disagree.
Well, let me clarify. The end? Totally. The end, I was surprised, and I'm very curious what's going to happen next issue. But it's also a textbook cliffhanger of sorts where they almost need to, I don't say backpedal or whatever. I mean, it made for a brilliant note to end this issue on, and that certainly helped this. But it's not like, again, to me, this is chapter of a story versus a full story, and that's the only thing really kind of working against this title, which is true for, frankly, most other titles on the rack these days. It's really well done. It's just, because it's been that well done since it started, it's kind of set my expectation of that's just how the book is these days. Not that this issue was particularly brilliant.
Yeah, allow me to gush. Get your get your boots out, because I think this was, you know, the best thing Marvel has out right now. I love the three Thors, their interplay. They have great chemistry. Of course, they're the same person, so I guess
that helps. Yeah,
I guess they should. But I just find, you know, Jason Aaron has the right voice for this book. The art is breathtakingly beautiful.
Yes,
to look
definitely.
At. The space shark. I'll even accept the space shark element. It was, for me, this is inspiring comic book publishing right here. I loved it, and I've loved most of the issues, but I thought this was just a fantastic issue. And then the Gore, the villain, you know, ever since we got his standalone issue, he has grown and grown, and his character has developed, and some of his lines are really genuinely funny, and you know, it's just great writing, great art. They two mesh wonderfully. The story is a great story that I don't even want to end. I mean, I don't care if the entire series runs forever and all they do is God Butcher stuff. I think it's a great arc, and I don't want it to stop.
Really?
Yeah. 5 out of 5.
Okay. I mean, that's interesting. I guess for me, I'm looking for this to have been an adventure for Thor, not the crux of his being and his Ragnarok, if you will, his premise. There are other properties and characters where there's a certain built-in dilemma, conflict that's what the story is about fundamentally. And I think for Thor, if this were, you know, him versus Loki or whatever, and it was just kind of an eternal chess match or whatever, it's like, okay, I could see that as the status quo or whatever. I think the God Butcher has been a good story, a good arc or whatever, but it's not something that I would really want or expect to last forever and ever. Now, do I want this creative team to be telling stories of this caliber for as long as they can? Certainly. I agree with everything you're saying about the quality of the writing. The art's amazing. The two are in sync and definitely working towards the same goals and complement each other very well. I guess the thing that prevents this from being a 5 out of 5 for me is, and it's a definite 4 out of 5 for me. No questions asked. This is good stuff, and it's been a good run the entire time. But it feels like it just, to a certain extent, just keeps going, which it's good stuff, so I'm all right with that. But it's so disconnected from everything else before Thor, you know, in Thor and the rest of the Marvel Universe right now, that seems a little, not bad, but just different and odd and takes a little getting used to. And this has become, this arc, this whole storyline, the status quo for Thor for, again, the last, you know, including this, 9 issues. So it's not like it's shaking things up, it's different, and there's a anything can happen kind of a deal. It's more of the same, and it's still good stuff, but it's like you wouldn't want to eat cake every day kind of a deal. And then the other thing for me is the ending. Well, I thought it was a brilliant note to end the story on, and certainly has me wondering what on, you know, on this planet, because it's not Earth, but what on this planet's going to happen next. It's also a literal cliffhanger ending in so much as a classic one where, you know, you saw the stage coast go all over the cliff and go back to the serial next week. They rewind and, oh, he's okay. He dived out on the other side. There's almost a certain backpedaling or something to have happen here. Now, what gives me a certain degree of faith and hope is next issue is the penultimate chapter, not the final chapter.
Right.
So I'm kind of expecting something to happen next time to put these, put things back into to play to really set up that final climax and stuff. And it be, I don't say a breather issue, but a regrouping issue, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. He has 2 issues left to close this story down, shut, you know, get it wound down. And I think that's enough. You know, we've had our 9 issues to build to this. So that's plenty. But I'm going to miss it. And I hope if we lose the God Butcher, we don't lose the 3 Thors. I hope that doesn't go with the God Butcher battle might be the only reason that we got the three simultaneous, storylines in the first place. And it might not work in any other fashion. And I would really miss that. That's what I really don't. I don't want to lose the 3 Thors. If the, you know, if the God Butcher is bested and all is right with the universe, that's fantastic. But let's keep the 3 Thor storyline somehow going, because it's brilliant storytelling. It's fantastic. I don't want to lose out on that.
That's the part I think is the hardest to sustain. Now, what would be? I mean, there are other ways they could do it. There, you know, bring in, you know, Beta Ray Bill, Thunderstrike, other Thor-ish characters, but it would be fundamentally different, because part of what's cool about this is, again, it's the same character at 3 distinct points in his life interacting. If this were a character or premise where time travel was intrinsic to it, that would be something I would say, yeah, it certainly fits, keep going with it. But with Thor, it seems a little unusual for it. But again, that's part of what makes this a good story arc and a good run. It'll be interesting to see how, a year from now or whatever, how, when these things are collected, how well they do, how well remembered this storyline is. Or is it just really cool right now to a lot of people because it's right now, and the next thing kind of, you know, makes people, I don't say forget about it, but you know what I mean?
I think it's gonna have legs.
I would expect so.
I think it's pretty top notch.
It's certainly better than a lot of runs of Thor, because let's face it, aside from, say, the Walt Simonson and a few others, there have been quite a few very forgettable runs of Thor.
Yeah, I was not really that impressed with Thor over the last 20 years or so. So I dipped in occasionally, but this is revolutionary, I think, storytelling.
I would agree with that. I just think it's... For me, the fact that it's been around so long has worn some of the shininess off it. It's still just as good, but it's I've gotten used to it versus wow, it's new and shiny.
But to do the story justice, if it took 10 issues to do the story justice and tell it the way you wanted to, I think that's fine. I mean, I don't think there have been any filler issues 1 through 9.
I would agree with that. I guess part of it was my expectations were set by the first arc, having been, you know, part one of X or whatever, and then it's followed up with a part one of 5 that's the same continuation of the same story.
Mm.
So I think it was just, if they had said, hey, this is going to be an 11-part story or whatever, get in, get comfortable.
Yeah, if you knew it was Court of Owls from the beginning.
Yeah, set my expectations. And at first, the issue where we got Gore's backstory felt like frankly, almost like a filler issue. It clearly was not, and was integral to the story and you know, it all pulling together how it has. But there was a certain amount of, well, we've got the 3 Thors, and suddenly we've got an issue with pretty much none of them, you know? So I think it's not the content, but the way they had kind of marketed and set some expectations. But again, I'm going to be curious to see if this goes down as one of the favored runs of the title, as I expect it could be and should be. And I'm also very curious what they're going to follow this with, and if they can do something that's just as cool in a different way, or even cooler, or, you know, what have you.
I hope so. I mean, when I'm, you know, if I watch Citizen Kane, I enjoy Citizen Kane. I don't worry about what the sequel is going to be. So, this is Citizen Kane-ish.
I guess for me, I'm the same way while I'm reading the story. I mean, I'm not worried about what's going to come next, but I am very curious because they've set a very high bar.
Yeah, which is great. Yes. Set it high. Shatter it.
Well, yeah. Or at the very least, meet it and exceed it, you know?
Yeah.
And the question is, can they or not? And I'm very optimistic they can.
Hope so, yeah.
And it's interesting because you were saying for you, this is like one of the best things at Marvel right now. And to me, that says a lot because there are a lot of really good titles going on right now.
Yeah, yeah. Marvel's got some hits. I'm enjoying a lot of what Marvel's doing.
So I hope they can just continue that moving forward on the different titles. So shall we move on to our other book?
Yes. Let's see how we agree on this one.
This is The Walking Dead number 111. I've been reading the entire series and stuff, of course. And it's interesting because I've always had a mixed feelings about Kirkman's stuff. He's, as you're reading the stuff, a really good, entertaining writer. He certainly has an instinctive understanding of storytelling. You think he's going one way. Sometimes he zigs. Sometimes he zags. Sometimes he keeps going the way you expect him to, just as a fake out or whatever. So it's not like, oh, well, he's definitely going to zig, you know? What I'm liking about this series is, you know, the story just continues to move along in this issue. And part of what makes this title work is there are no fill-in issues. Everything is central to the ongoing story. And it's a single ongoing story. Yeah, there are multiple characters involved, but not like a lot of other serial stories and stuff that have multiple kind of quasi-related plots that all, you know, center around a general theme or you know, event or conflict or whatever. Everything seems very key to the storyline that's moving through this. And I think that's a lot of what makes this title really work.
Yeah. For me, sometimes Walking Dead is sparse. And I'm used to it. If this were not Walking Dead, I would say, boy, you know, you don't really get a lot of content for your money. But because it's Walking Dead, they get a little bit of a pass. There's a lot of good things about this issue. Negan, the villain, is he's charismatic. He almost makes you forget what he did at issue 100, which I don't know what the statute of limitation is on spoilers, so he did something bad at issue 100.
He's the villain. Of course he does bad things, but yes.
Yeah. But I found myself forgetting what he did in 100 and thinking, go Negan. And I'm like, wait a minute, which side am I supposed to, wait, I'm not supposed to be cheering for him. He's bad. I'm not supposed to have, he doesn't have any likable characteristics. What happened there? Well, how did you do that? You know? And that was great. And I love that there's a lot of tension in this issue, which I loved. Mm-hmm. And you can just feel it building. You can feel the tension building off the page. And you know there is a massive confrontation coming, and you can just feel it. And you can cut it with a knife. It's very thick. I don't know when, because it's Kirkman. It could happen whenever or never, but you can feel it coming and building to something.
Well, and the building to something is what I really love about this title, because there are some issues more so than others that have that kind of click, click, click as you're going up the roller coaster right to the top of the crest or whatever before you go careening around in the twists and turns and stuff. And there's an aspect of this issue that was very much not set up, but ratcheting things up. You know, obviously there is set up in this, but it's one that it's done in a way that it's not moving chess pieces on the board for sake of moving them. Things happen here that have payoff in and of themselves. Again, we get a lot, like you said, with Negan as Rick and the others are kind of doing some other stuff. And there was one scene that was a bit violent, a bit gory, not too bad, but
yeah.
It needed to be there to show what kind of person someone is. And it could have been done off panel or whatever. Yeah, but to do so would have undercut the scene and the character. I mean, to me, that was one of those parts of this title where it's a, you know, things are going to happen later. So to really get this character, things need to happen. Okay, let's again, ratchet up the tension. And Kirkman is a master at that.
I think the real moral is if somebody asks you, a villain asks you if you have a pool table, say no. That's really what we should take away from Walking Dead 111.
I think if Negan were to ask you anything,
say no, no, no.
Pleading
sir.
Deafness and signing like mad would be the way to go,
and run for the hills.
Yeah, there's clearly this is building to another major confrontation of sorts. And it'll be a lot of fun when it gets there. And what I'm enjoying is, you could argue this is a quieter issue of Walking Dead, not much action or whatever, but a fair amount happens, even though it really only covers an evening and part of the next day.
Yeah, it felt like it was like a 45-minute real-time comic. Didn't feel like there was that it didn't cover that much time, but okay, that makes sense.
I mean, not much time was covered, but enough happened there, enough of the plot was moved forward, enough character revelation or illustration or whatever happened. There was a scene where it was very much, I thought, setting things up to go in a particular direction. And then as Kirkman is wont to do, it's like, hey, you know I was leading you by the nose this way. Well, guess what? I'm the writer, and this is how things are going to go.
Yes.
And again, I like how sometimes he pulls a left, sometimes he swerves right, sometimes he just keeps going because he made you think he was going to swerve left or right.
And where I sometimes complain about the twice twice monthly shipping that Marvel's been doing with some of those titles, and you know the extra investment that you have to make to read that title, I think Walking Dead would really benefit from maybe not every other week, but maybe every 3 weeks a new issue would come out to keep that momentum going. Just because they did it a little bit leading up to 100, and it really benefited from it. You know, you just could not wait to get to 100, and I think waiting the full month, although maybe it's just because it's only a week, I still think that would make a huge difference if we could get them more often. But Kirkman's kind of busy.
He's busy, and it takes a little time for Charlie Allred to draw the stuff, of course, but I agree. I think this is one of the titles where a faster frequency of release would help what's already very strong story momentum. I don't think it would burn people out, because this is, you know, the 111th issue of the same story. You know what I mean? It's not like it's got, you know, 6 issues done, boom, we're starting a new beginning or whatever.
But Adler's art is not anything. That's not why I read Walking Dead. If they swapped another artist in there to pick up the pace for an arc, I don't think you would lose a beat. Although I know he's had 100 issues, and there's probably some loyalty there on Kirkman's. I wouldn't miss him if they swapped somebody else in. I mean, the weakest part of Walking Dead for me is his art.
Really?
Covers notwithstanding, they're usually pretty great, but the interior, some of the characters look very similar, and it may be the black and white thing versus a color. You can't get the characterizations as well defined, but yeah, sometimes I'm reading a panel and I think, boy, that person looks exactly like that other person over there.
And that's a fair comment, and at times it's made it a little hard for me to follow and know which one is this character again, because it's been a while since we'd seen him before. So I see where you're coming from there. And I agree. I think people are they're liking the art. I don't think they're coming for the art. By and large, they're coming for the story by Kirkman.
Yes.
And I think you're right. If they were to find a compatible, artist and, you know, flipped arcs or whatever and stuff, they could definitely get this out more often, and that would just be beneficial to everybody. And it's ironic because in most cases, you, with every issue you release, you've lost sales. That's not the case here.
Right. And think of what Sean Murphy did in black and white on Rock and Roll Jesus. I mean, can you imagine his lines in Walking Dead, the Walking Dead world? I think that would be a perfect fit. And, you know, you could do 3 or 4 at a time and go back and forth and put out an issue every couple of weeks. Not going to happen, but.
No, but it would be interesting if it did, and this is one of the few titles I think that could really sustain it and benefit from that. It's also one of the titles with the longest ongoing storyline. I would say it's right behind Fables, as far as I can tell, for currently being published.
Yeah.
And Fables has even then jumped a little forward here and there, whereas this has been following there are no gaps in continuity, really, with Walking Dead. Again, Kirkman, there are times where it's like when I stop and think about the story after I've read it, like with this issue, there's an aspect of, you know, I should have seen that coming if I were kind of trying to predict where it goes, because he's setting me up, and therefore I think he's going to, you know, if I'd stopped and thought about it, he's probably going to turn this way because I'm expecting this other thing. But that's also part of why when I read comics or watch TV, you know, whatever, just in general, and certainly with Kirkman, I don't try to predict what's going on. Now, sometimes it just pops into my head of, well, I think this is where it's going. But Kirkman is so, and I don't know that he's consciously thinking about all this stuff either. He just is very instinctively, or maybe consciously, aware of the reader expectation, where the audience thinks things are going, and works with that and circumvents that and can, you know, subverts that at times very effectively.
And another aspect to this series, there are so many additional readers that are trade waiters on Walking Dead. There's no numbers on this, but I would bet any amount of money that Walking Dead is the most torrented, stolen, pirated comic online around the world, where folks can't get floppy comics. If you could somehow put a number on the trade waiters, the people that steal it, in other countries and around the world, I mean, I think these numbers would put Walking Dead way up there. I mean, I know it does pretty well, but I know those numbers, I think, are extra large for this title.
Well, you add in the people reading it at the bookstores, the libraries, wherever.
Yes.
If you were to total up the total readership is really what you're getting down to.
I think that's the word I wanted to say but couldn't come up with. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely think this would be the top of the list as to what's most widely read. I would be hard-pressed to name anything that I think would really give it a run for the money.
Exactly.
I mean, obviously, Batman's doing very well and stuff on the monthly side, but Walking Dead has been continuing to climb in sales and climb on the charts on the monthly side, and is just a powerhouse on the collected side. And to me, it all comes back to, again, as good as the art is, it's the story that brings people back.
Exactly. And like when you, in the movie business, when you figure in video sales and you figure in foreign sales in a, you know, built into your business model. Mm-hmm. If you can get to the point where you figure in these other areas of readership, and there's different ways to market these titles, then you have your floppy comic, your digital, your trade waiters, you have your library users. You know, if you add those up, that's an interesting data set to look at, in my mind, if it could ever exist.
Well, and just how are the readers split across those different channels and stuff? And also over time, you know, do you get more people reading, you know, the trades, over time, or is there more secondary readers on the hardcovers? However, you know,
yeah,
it would be very interesting.
I'm assuming that the first trade has well over 100,000 copies by now, well over.
I believe so. I would have to pull up that.
And then it's also been collected in the compendiums. It's been collected in those trade collections.
The first issue came out as a comic, as a trade, as a hardcover, as a compendium in the Walking Dead Weekly then. And I'm willing to bet it's been reprinted at least once or twice beyond that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the Image First. And
Exactly. Image First. And that one tends to continue to sell on the charts. And that Image First came out a couple of years ago.
And
so,
what is that number, I wonder?
Impressive.
A quarter of a million, more than that?
Again, I would have to do a little digging around to go pull up the latest numbers across the different formats just for what I can track. And then I would say if you're going for readers, not purchasers, you could easily double it.
And for me, that's a very positive sign. If that's let's say that's a big number. Because when you look at the sales from month to month of comics, and you see the number one comic sells 80,000 some months, 70,000, you know, lower months, you think, man, there's not that many comic buyers out there. There's not that many people that can sustain this industry that we love so much. But if you can kind of figure it another way, and of course, some of those people are buying it in all those formats, and they're all sitting next to each other on the shelf. But if you look at the total readership, maybe there's a positive that maybe the comic readership can grow, and it might be a positive thing.
Well, I think one of the things Kirkman could do that would be very beneficial potentially for the industry would be to co-write a book on writing comics. And very clearly co-write. One section of the book would be him basically, here's how I'm going about The Walking Dead, here's what I think about, here's what I do, here's what I don't do, you know, whatever his philosophy, techniques, etc. But try for him to capture what he thinks is working and not working about how he's doing stuff. And then have the other part of the book be other people analyzing and basically telling from the outside looking in at the writing, what do they think's working, what do they think's not working, etc. Because clearly there is something with The Walking Dead that is uniquely successful. For a title that at one point, I mean, it started well below 10,000, dipped on the second issue, and is now, you know, routinely well over the 50,000 mark and climbing up and has gotten as high as, 80 or 90,000 and stuff, not counting the 100th issue with all the covers. Something is working. This is continually increasing in sales. Most titles do not.
But it is lightning in a bottle. You don't see these happen very often.
I would be hard-pressed to name any other instance during the Final Order era, which goes back about 10 years now, where we have seen this.
I would think Saga is going to get there.
Could be.
But if you take those two out of the equation, I can think of nothing.
To me, it comes down to there's something about the writing that once people try it, they stay.
Yeah.
It is a stickier comic in terms of property, presence, and continued readership, and that's the long-term sign of success. So there's going to be aspects about what Kirkman's doing that he gets and can articulate, and there are going to be other aspects that other people get and can articulate, and I think there is a potentially fascinating book about how to write comics to be had there.
I want that book, too. I'll take it.
Yeah, that would be something that, books like that often sit on my shelf unread for a while. That would not. I would be very fascinated to get some insights as to what his methodology is and how he thinks it works and why he thinks, if he even knows or has thoughts on this, Walking Dead has been so successful and his other properties really not so much.
Yeah, I mean, even Invincible, which would be he got to 100 issues, but I don't know what the sales are. They can't be that much.
Again, I'd have to go pull up that spreadsheet and stuff. It's doing okay.
Yeah.
But it's not like Walking Dead.
No.
Or even
several other Image titles.
Yeah. It's one thing to say Saga could get there and some of the others. I mean, that's certainly very likely, but we're still in the single digits on those titles.
Yeah.
So the fact that we've got, 100 issues plus of Walking Dead and Invincible give us a pretty good track record for those.
Right.
But
we can't Saga because the creative team are so, they can really only do 5 issue chunks at a time and take a little break. I don't know how much momentum they can maintain if readers will continue to be as patient as they have been on that title. I hope so.
Hope so, but it'll be interesting. And does the shiny newness wear off the next time something else comes around? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what'd you give Walking Dead?
I gave it a did I even say what I gave it? Hang on, let me.
I don't know.
I gave it a 4 out of 5.
You, yeah, me too.
Okay, that's a good question. We had actually skipped that part. Thank you. Just not paying enough
attention. For those playing along at home.
Yes, for those adding up the scores, it's imaginary numbers, irrational numbers, and random numbers. No.
Were mine the irrational ones?
No, those were always mine. Speaking of numbers, one thing I want to point out, just because I can, not because it matters, this was my 500th weekly shipment from DCBS.
Wow. Did the balloons come down?
No, they didn't. But I'm getting a ton of stuff from them. It is, I started going with them 2003 and November 2003 and stuff. I've been exceedingly happy with them. And so just if anyone was wondering if mail order can work and stuff, I was incredibly skeptical before I started, but have been very pleased ever since.
For those of you keeping score at home, this will be my 3rd shipment from DCBS. So no parties, please. No gifts.
Are you getting weekly or monthly?
I'm a monthly guy.
I do weekly. They accumulate faster that way.
Yeah.
I don't think I could lift the box if I got it monthly.
I don't think you could either.
Let's see. So with Other comics came out this week. Last issue of Avenging Spider-Man, that was number 22. It's going to get replaced by Superior Spider-Man Team-Up.
Lackluster, I thought.
It was good, but not brilliant. I mean, I could see why they're retooling and changing the title and stuff. Did you read Bubblegum number 1?
No.
I read it. I thought it was fun, but it's not something I think I need to continue with. Wasn't bad. It was trying to be a more action loose, trying to think what would be the right way to phrase it. Less serious, you know, more focused on the fun than the serious storytelling or whatever. And it still told a good story and stuff. It just, again, not something I felt I just have to continue with for a 5-issue series.
Was this Aspen?
Yes. And this was one of their dollar ones.
Yeah. I definitely ordered both covers just to support the idea of dollar comics, whether I continue with it or not, I don't know. But I will read it.
The dollar price got me in. It gave it a shot. Yep. There have been some where it's paid off for them. This just wasn't one of them. But I totally applaud the fact that they're putting their money where their mouth is, taking some of the risk and stuff like that. I really respect that.
True, because they have to be losing a little money to do this.
Yeah, but they're taking on the risk. They're not throwing it on the retailer or the reader, and they're standing behind their work. And you, how can you not respect that?
So, exactly.
Constantine number 4, I've read more issues of Constantine than I think I've ever read of Hellblazer. And it's issue 4 of Constantine, and Hellblazer went to 300, so take from that what you will. I'm really enjoying this title. I'm frankly very glad they've made the change they did, kicked him into the new 52 wholeheartedly. I know there are a lot of people who preferred Hellblazer, and I get that, and that's cool. But, you know, for me, this is working. Have you been keeping up with Katana, or did you give up on that one?
Oh, yeah, long gone.
Yeah. I'm starting to wonder if they're going to tie Katana into some of the new stuff they're doing with the Green Arrow mythology, with the Seven Clans and stuff like that.
Oh.
Because it's pretty much in line with what they've been doing in that title already. But they haven't firmly said, yeah, it's part of that or not. So, another one I got was, I'm not even sure how to pronounce this. Cirrhosis, Cerusis.
Liver disease?
Cirrhosis or whatever? If so, it's a really unfortunate name for a title. And I apologize for butchering that, but yeah, it's from Big Dog Inc. I support most of what they do, actually. They've done a lot of great stuff. This was good, but the first issue of 5 felt like it was all set up, no real payoff to speak of, but I'm curious where it goes, so I'll keep going with it. It was entertaining. I liked it. But this marketplace, I think out of a 5-issue thing, even, you know, with that, you gotta have a stronger first issue.
You already have the others pre-ordered?
Yeah, pretty much. And frankly, it's one of those where you get a bunch of people, throw them across the galaxy, you know, kind of like the premise of Farscape, Galaxy Quest, and half a dozen other such titles, or properties or whatever. Same idea. But it comes down to, is the execution good? And it had some interesting ideas. It's a sci-fi title, and there's frankly not many space sci-fi titles out there these days. And I like what Big Dog does. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt so far. Are you reading Smallville Season 11?
No.
This was number 14, had the Superman and the Legion stuff. Great stuff. I'm loving it. This is one of those where I think the digital first is really working out, and of course I'm getting it in print, but that works out for me too. How about Wolverine and the X-Men number 31? You keep going with that title, or have you not caught up from the previous stuff that you'd bought back issues on?
I did not read that one yet.
I'll be curious what you think of that one.
I did 30, okay, and it took a step down for me from 29, but no, I haven't read 31 yet.
29 that we had talked about, I think, had the benefit of pretty much being a done-in-one story. And I think, by and large, that always helps an issue because it makes the issue stand out from the surrounding issues. Mm. What else did you read this week?
Oh, Year Zero, Batman 21.
What'd you think of that?
I loved it. I didn't like it as much as I read it again. And it grew on me. You know, I thought, it was good. It was good. I kind of felt like I did with Superman Unchained. But, you know, how did Gotham get like it is in this storyline, or what it was 6 years ago, or 6.5 years? I'm trying to get my timelines straight. But it, I want to. I love Batman and what he was then, and the Bruce Wayne he was then, and I can't wait to see what's next and his evolution. How we know where he is now, but and where he was in year one. I want to see him get to there, and I just loved it. I thought there was a lot of really great stuff in there.
I would agree with that. They did some fun stuff. There are a couple of, you know, one or two things I consider to be kind of Easter eggs or whatever that I really enjoyed. It was very fun, and I'm looking forward to kind of reading the rest of that storyline.
Yeah. I mean, the little hat with the insignia that we recognize.
Yeah.
I want to know what's up that with that.
That was one of the Easter eggs that it's like there's something to be had there. I want to know what.
That's a story in itself, and I cannot wait. The penny that we saw on the side of that building. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff like that I can't wait. I can't wait. I know he's got it plotted out. I know he's got it all tucked away and set up, and he's just going to give it to us when he gives it to us, and I'm excited.
Well, what's fun is it's got a sense of kind of a premeditated story, not just kind of doing it on the fly as it comes up.
No.
Setting those things up that we suspect are going to have payoff. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah,
it gives you a reason to tune in and pay attention.
Yeah. I the second reading was great. It really was. It just, you know, opened up some more things for me, because I was just eager to get through it and see everything I could see. And then I could kind of take my time the second time through.
That was one of the ones that I had put off till later in my reading of the stack.
To reward yourself?
I was a little apprehensive, cautiously optimistic,
yeah,
I think
yeah.
would be the way to go, because it's one of those things that could have not worked out as well, you know? And it's one of those, if for some reason it didn't click with me, and I'd be thinking, wow, we've got how many issues of this storyline going?
Yeah, exactly.
But it worked. There were one or two things that I thought were a little, really, you went with this technology back then and stuff, how convenient, but not many. And those are just nitpicks, and I usually have those kind of across the board.
And I don't know how you felt about Death of the Family as it drug on. For me, it started very strong and just trickled downhill to the end and stumbled across the finish line a little bit for me. So that would be my only caution for my enthusiasm early for Year Zero is, can he maintain it throughout the story? I don't know.
I think,
what were your thoughts on Death of the Family?
I think you summed it up pretty well. That was, and I think part of why I was a little hesitant going in of, is this going to work or not? Because Death of the Family, like you said, started strong, but it's like watching a race where the lead guy gets to the end, trips, falls, and just makes a mess, you know, just completely, you know, falls flat right before hitting the finish line. Then the second place person gets a couple of steps further and same thing happens. Cause I felt with, Red Hood and the Outlaw, it's like, oh wow, they did that with the Red Hood. And then you get the third place guy kind of going through, which would in this case be, the whole stuff with Damian over in Batman Incorporated. You know, it was a swing and a miss, a swing and a miss, and then a total another thing out of left field was a home run. It's like, what the hell happened there?
Yeah, it was almost like, I'm going to make, for the Batman Inc., I'm going to make a giant mess, and then here you go, guys. You still have continuing titles, so good luck. And
well,
that's too bad.
And I felt the big splash with Damian and stuff was not an integral outcome of what had been happening in Batman Inc.
And Peter Tomasi was doing such good work with Batman and Robin.
Yes.
And I feel like he may have known, and it may have been all planned out, and he might have a plan for it, but I just feel like the rug was pulled out from under him. Here's this title that I have running on all cylinders, and now half my cylinders are gone.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with this? And how, I don't know the long term how this is going to be a sustained title. I really don't.
It may just be the Batman team-up title. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see with, I guess, the October solicits, since the September ones are for the villain month, what's going to happen with that title.
Yeah, because the five stages of death will be over. And
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But they've been doing such great stuff with Damian that to have all that stuff happen after Death of the Family fell flat, after a fake out or whatever over in the Red Hood and stuff, it just seemed like the editorial office in the Batman family at DC wasn't firing on all cylinders, made some strategic errors, and that made me a little worried about the 0 year stuff. But again, the first issue, really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely loved that title. I really like Savage Wolverine 6. The new creative team with Zeb Wells took over, and I was worried. But I really enjoyed the writing. I loved seeing Peter Parker, Spider-Man, in it.
Yes.
Kind of out of continuity, but that was okay with me. And they gave a little disclaimer at the beginning, so that was nice. And, I didn't realize it during the Cho run, but Savage Wolverine is basically Wolverine team-up. And it took me 5-6 issues to kind of figure that out, but I guess that's what its purpose is. And I think that's okay. And I like Elektra in this. I liked a lot about it. And I thought, well, this is good, because I was worried that it was going to take a jump down from the Cho run. And it's still good. I'm going to keep on that title for sure.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one too. But you're right. Wolverine and His Amazing Friends would have been the right title for it.
I love that. I love that. Nightwing 21. I would like to go ahead and call it that the Prankster is the worst villain in the history of comics.
Really?
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of competition for that slot.
I'm going to call it now. I hated him. I just hated him. It was just terrible. And it was a good issue, though. I mean, it's still a good book. And I'm enjoying it.
It's a good book, but it's written for the trade.
It is. And I don't know, the Tony Zucco character, does he look incredibly young in this
yes,
book?
Yes, way too young, way too young.
He looks about the same age as Nightwing, which means he would have had to kill Nightwing's parents when he was a toddler, right?
Could happen.
I don't know.
Yeah, that didn't work too well for me.
Yeah,
either.
He seemed incredibly young looking, and I don't know why they did that. I guess everybody has to be 30 or younger in DC, but... but then, if you go over to Batgirl 21,
mm-hmm.
I love the ventriloquist villain. I thought he was a little oversexed wooden Joker character. He was great. I hope he comes back somehow. And we see him again because I love that guy.
Yeah, that was cool. And I think, Nightwing was well used in that issue as well.
Yes. And I love that play between Nightwing and Batgirl. They bounce off each other well and they have good charisma. Their character. But yeah, the that was a great issue of Batgirl, and she took care of business, and it was one of her stronger issues.
Have you been reading Suicide Squad?
No.
Reason I ask is her brother is now a member over there.
James?
Yep. James
wow.
Gordon is now over in Suicide Squad.
Oh my.
And issue 21 that came out this week, he was integral part of it.
He does not play well with others.
That's
that might not
true.
End well. let's see. Did you pick up True Lives of the Fabulous Killjoys?
No, I do not.
That was a Gerard Way, My Chemical Romance, his book, and I did not care for it. It was very muddled and unclear plot-wise.
That's too bad.
Yeah, it was not a good number one for me. Are you reading Blackacre?
No, I'm not.
Blackacre 7 was... It's Duffy Boudreau is the writer, and it's really good. It's I would say kind of like a Game of Thrones meets Walking Dead type of world. There are no zombies, but that kind of bleak future on the
right.
outside with there's a wall involved, and there's a lot of politics going on inside this wall. So it's worth a look. I think the first trade is out. You might want to check that out. I think it's if it's an Image trade, it's probably $9 or so.
Usually they do on the first ones the lower price just to get people in the door, which is a smart move.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. How about Star Wars 6? Enjoy that?
Have not been getting the Star Wars stuff. They kind of burned me out on that a couple of years back when I was getting most of what was coming out. I've dipped my toe in a few times, but currently at this point I'm not getting any... But I'm debating if I want to get the adaptation of the original screenplay.
Oh, well, that's neat. Yeah, Brian Woods got the voice of this universe down. This particular issue was really a good story with Leia's injured and there's a rescue, and there's a traitor in the rebel forces, and seems very familiar. But it's a really good story. I'm enjoying it a lot. And you know, Brian Wood is just, he's got some really great books going right now.
Yeah, he's a very talented writer. I'm glad to see he's both getting some recognition, success, and able to play with some cool toys.
To bounce back to the Year Zero, are you going to get the director's cut?
I have not pre-ordered that.
I'm kind of glad I did now after reading it. I think it would be really interesting to see the script and how it translated. So I'm pretty psyched that I pulled the trigger on that one.
When you get that, let me know if it's worth picking up, and I can go to the local shop.
Now I'm thinking maybe I should have done Wake, but yeah, those are kind of neat. So kind of excited about that. But that pretty much does it for me. It was good, another good week of comics.
Yeah, had some great stuff. Again, I think there are a lot of titles just really firing on all cylinders right now. A few here and there that are falling flat, but really not many. It's good stuff, and I'm excited to see what the publishers have kind of waiting in the wings with the convention season about to kick in. Because normally we'll get some major announcements and stuff like that, and if things are already this good, I can only imagine what's coming down the pike.
Yeah, it should be some good stuff.
Cool. Join us next time for Justice League of America's Vibe number 5 from DC, Age of Ultron number 10 from Marvel, and Mind the Gap number 11 from Image Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.